الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. It was around the age of 11 that the Prophet had taken the journey with his uncle Abu Talib to Sham. Sham is the area that is referred to as the modern day Palestine, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan. The whole area was known as Sham. Bilad al-Sham was that country, that nation, that whole region. That's what it was referred to in those days. Now, just to give a lesson on the geopolitical situation at that time, so something else can be understood regarding the Messenger of Allah being in Mecca and why Allah revealed His final message in Mecca. Noting the fact that if you look at the history of the region of Hijaz, which is Mecca, one of the strange things that you will see in that place in the history was that it was a land that was truly abandoned. Land that no one came to and no one who lived there went out of there. It was a people and a land that was kept hidden, isolated from the rest of the world. If you look at it, there's mountains on either side of Mecca, mountain range that goes from the east and the west, Mecca in between that. And on the other side of the mountain ranges is a vast area of desert, complete barren land, uninhabitable. So no one, even in their dreams, would want to go to this place and live there. No one would even think of doing that. And the people who lived there, the people who settled down there, and you see that history is coming down from where? From Ismail and his children. Allah kept this group of people, this community, living in this harsh environment generation after generation for thousands of years. It's like, for example, the people in Hijaz were isolated from the rest of the world, like the way we today in modern times see, for example, certain villages in the Amazon or such places that are completely isolated from civilization. People used to refer to the people who live in Hijaz as barbarians, as people who are half humans, people who desert dwellers, or what is known as Bedouins. These are people who lived in this region. And as I said, there was two superpowers then, the Roman Empire, which was then known as the Byzantine Empire to the west, and then you had the Persian Empire to the east, and beyond that there are other kingdoms and rulers. But then you see, when we look at this isolated situation, you would wonder, why Allah, why did you reveal your final message that was going to be your final testament for mankind in such an isolated place? First, a person would think about this. Why would you do that? Why would you reveal your message in a place where no one goes to and no one goes out of? Why is it that this is a place that's going to be revealed? So if the question is clear in your mind, then we need to see this. Why Allah revealed it then, and then you will understand that not just was this chose, but this was the ideal place for the final testament to come and the final message to be revealed. Now, in this regard, let me explain this if you send a salawat. Now hear this, right? As I said, my friends, understand the situation there very well. It will really help you to understand the seerat of the Prophet in the future. If you all just take a moment of your time and move forward here. There's a lot of room on this side. There are people who are coming from outside. So let's room from them with a loud salawat. Alright, very good. So now, why did Allah reveal the message in Makkah? I want us to understand this. It will come later also. But I want to give a prelude to the situation, the geopolitical situation at that time, so then it can make sense for you. You see, the two regions of the world, one to the west, one to the east, and both regions had superpowers, and both regions had many kingdoms who used to trade with one another. Trade routes went from China to through India all the way to Mid-Asia to the Middle East, coming to Yemen. That trade route stops at Yemen. Then in the West, trade routes are in the Mediterranean, you had the North Africa, you had Europe, and all of that coming through the Roman Empire to the Byzantine Empire, and that trade route ended in Sham. So on one hand, you had a trade route that began in Sham and went westward. You had another trade route that began in Yemen and went eastward. All the traders, all business used to happen in these regions. And all trade used to come either from the east to Yemen or from the west to Sham or Syria, present-day Syria. So Syria was the doorway to the west, Yemen was the doorway to the east. Now the issue is this, the trade that used to happen to these spots, there was no way that people who wanted to now take the goods that come to Yemen, there is no way for them to take those goods to the west. And the goods that used to come to Syria, there is no way for them to take it to the east by a sea route. Well, obviously they didn't have air routes in those days. So we're talking about the sea or land. So there was no sea connection between Sham and Yemen. The only connection that Sham and Yemen had was a land connection. So all trade that was from the east or the west that used to come to Sham and Yemen then used to be traded through the land, and in between this land route that connected the eastern world and the western world was Makkah. See this. The whole world naturally in its geography was connected by Makkah. There is no sea route that went from the east to the west. The canals that they dug up, you know, only happened recently, right? The different the Egyptian canal and all these things happened recently. In those days there was no sea route. Yemen was the trade zone, Syria was the trade zone. From there they had to go by land, and by land they had to cross Makkah, and Makkah was at the central of this route. All trade caravans used to stop over in Makkah. All trade used to happen between that. So if you wanted to get the message, any news out to the world, then to make it go to the west, you would go and speak of it in Syria, or you would speak of it in Yemen. Yemen will take the news all the way east, because traders are the ones who carried news. You didn't have CNN in those days. The only way news was carried around was by traders. Traders and businessmen who would come by sea and by trade, they will take the message there and they will give witness and testimony of what they seen or what they heard. This used to be the whole geopolitical situation at that time. And hence you see, Mecca was the middle of the world at that time, connecting the East and the West. On one hand, it was isolated from civilization in order to preserve it being not influenced by others. And hence you see that Mecca remained uninfluenced. The people of Mecca remained uninfluenced by the East nor the West. They had their own way of life, their own thinking, their own culture, their own customs. Untouched by the West and untouched by the East. And this isolation is what led to their ignorance and their arrogance. On one hand, they were ignorant because they did not want to learn from anyone. And on one hand, they were arrogant because they thought they didn't need to learn from anyone. So this was the situation in which the Prophet came to. So it would be ideal for the Prophet to give a message, ideal for Allah to give a message, just go and speak of it and let it go to Syria or let it go to Yemen. And hence you see that the traders, the people will carry the news everywhere else in the least amount of time. That was the most efficient place for the message to come and to spread from. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. So the Prophet from that early age made multiple trips to Sham, to Syria, and to Yemen. He went to Yemen also, and he preached of the message in Yemen. He was seen in Yemen also. To both these places, he went on trade caravans. In fact, there's a third place that's mentioned in history and riwayat that he went to. Believe it or not, the Prophet also had been to Dubai. Yes, he was in Dubai. In fact, when there were people who came from Dubai, and now it wasn't called Dubai then, right? In those days it was called Bahrain. The region was called Bahrain. Right? When the people came there to accept Islam, the Prophet talked about his visit to those places and mentioned the areas that he saw there. Right? To their amazement. That they didn't know. Oh, you were there. And the Prophet said, yes, I came there, you know, and we visited there and we had trade there. So these were places that you see the Prophet had gone to in his trade caravans in different places. And that's what he was doing with his uncle. With his uncle, he was doing trade in those places. Now, these trips went to first make him known amongst the people in those regions. My friends, the Prophet, as is with all of Ahlul Bayt, you see, one of the particular qualities that the Prophet had, that also the rest of the Ahlul Bayt have, rest of the Imams have, is that they don't need to be made to look good. All the Imams and the Prophet, all of them have a natural charisma to just attract people. Their looks are such that people will be enchanted by them. And Prophet was no different. Wherever the Prophet went, everyone would stop on that street and would stare at the Prophet, because he was that good looking. He was so handsome. He was so charming. His eyes were so beautiful. His features were so good. and magnificent that everyone would just stop and look at him. And this is where you see this whole journeys were taken to, in order that people recognize him and start to fall in love with him. And this is what happened. When we see the first trip I was speaking about yesterday, when they went to a place called Busra and they met the monk, the Christian monk known as Buhayra, and Buhayra came and met the prophet and saw the prophet and then gave a speech as to his greatness. You see, everyone got to know in the caravan who the prophet is. Then from there onwards, now Buhayra had warned Abu Talib that, listen, don't go anywhere. Because Busra, where he was at the beginning of the country of Sham. It was on the outskirts. He says, don't go into Sham. Beware. Just like I have recognized this boy, others are going to recognize him also. Do not go there. Go back. Now, obviously, Abu Talib could not sell that idea to the other caravan people because they all came here to make money. Right? And they said, hey, listen, obviously that's not going to fly. So Abu Talib didn't even raise that. He didn't even mention that to the people. He said, listen, Allah is the protector. He knows that. He believes in it. He has conviction in it. So he says, Allah is going to protect the Prophet. If he has done it so far, he is going to also protect him there also. And no matter what enemies have planned for him or plotted, it's not going to work because this is Allah's promise. So with that in mind, he went forward into Syria. And as he went forward into Syria and he came upon the city, it is said that the light, there was a light that shone from the caravan. The light that was shown from the caravan that the people in the city saw. And inquiring as to what this light is, they all came out to see it. And it came from the camp in which the Prophet was staying at, which was on the outskirts where they had set up shop. Because the way the caravans used to work is that they would come and there would be a place for them that they can put out their goods, and those goods will be there for people to see, and then they will buy the goods and so forth until they're sold. So the camp, would be the place where they would come. So they will have their goods over there and things over there. Now, what happened is this. This was the camp that's outside. Then they would get the goods and walk in with the goods into town, to the town center where the market is, and they'll sell the goods there. So now what happened is that because of this light that emanated from this camp and the people of Syria, people of the town, they all wanted to see what this light is. They could see it and they all came out. There was a crowd of people. There was like a riot of people that came out there to see who is this is from. And when they saw this young boy and they saw how pretty he was and how good he was, how magnificent he was, they were just like, everyone wanted a chance to see him. Now, because the crowd was there, the caravan who had the goods did not have to market their product. The marketing came by itself, right? The customers came themselves. And hence, when they saw that this is the blessing, this child is blessed, this child is holy, and all of these people are just like looking at him. And so in the meanwhile, the traders that came in the caravan, they took out their goods, and there were so many people there that now they bought the goods from this caravan at a steep price, meaning they paid extra in order to buy it. If something is worth $1, they said, I'll give you $3, just give it to me, because they were just excited. And in that excitement, they paid a lot of money. And hey, the people who came with the Prophet, they're looking at this, they're seeing the profits that they are raking in, and so they're not complaining. Right? They're all happy and they want this and see business. And so much was the rush there that in few hours, they sold all their goods. They sold all their goods and for an abundant amount of money that they had never made before. Now, obviously when they sold the good, which used to take like a week or so, for them to go out and market it and show the people, take it in the neighborhoods and the streets and show people what they got, it used to take days. And now they sold everything in a few hours. So now as they sold everything in a few hours, so now they're like, okay, now let's go and buy the goods. Because now they, after you sell your stuff, now you buy the goods to take in order to sell in Makkah. That's how the trade was done. So now they went out and started buying goods in different places, different marketplaces, seeing what's new in town, what are the new products that are there. This is how they used to do the business, right? So now in that meanwhile, when these people came out, there was one priest, a Christian priest, the top priest in Syria. He was like the cardinal there. You would call him like the Pope. You know, next to the Pope, the Archbishop, you know, in Syria, right? And he heard this and he saw the light. He came there to where the Prophet was and he remained with the Prophet for 3 days. I mean, he was just lingering around the Prophet, wherever the Prophet, he was only 11 years old, right? So the Prophet is walking around, you see this old bearded Ayatollah guy walking behind him. Right? He would be walking behind him, and people were like, okay, what is going on here? Right. So what happened is that, you know, then, you know, as he was just going about, lingering around, he didn't say a word, not a word, just observing the Prophet. Observing the Prophet. Now everyone is seeing this. They all know him. And they're all wondering, why is he out here acting like a child? He's like going after the Prophet, sitting next to him, seeing him, observing him, just like that. On the third day, Abu Talib came up to him and said, hey monk, what do you want with this child? Yeah, so he then spoke for the first time and said, I want to know his name. I want to know his name. So Abu Talib said, his name is Muhammad ibn Abdullah. And then he said, can I see his back? Meaning his, you know, the Prophet, you know, the Prophet had a symbol of prophethood on the back, on right between the two shoulders, in between the two shoulders, beneath his neck, there was the sign of prophethood that said, La ilaha illallah Muhammadan Rasulullah, right? This was Salawat ala Muhammad. And this was a sign that everyone had heard of, that he will come with the sign on his back, right? So he said, may I see his back, his bare back? So Abu Talib pulled the shirt down. And as soon as he saw that symbol, this is the archbishop in Syria. His name is Hester. As soon as he saw that symbol, he started to cry and he right away bent down and kissed it. He bent down and kissed it. That's it. He started to cry. And as he was crying, he told Abu Talib, take him back to his native land. Take him back to his native land. You don't know how many enemies he has here. Take him back and never bring him back here. Now, Abu Talib already knows the grandeur of the Prophet and what this mission is, right? But then, these are the people who now are going to propagate the message of the Prophet. Why do you think that the people, for example, in Sham, in other places, accepted Islam right away when the message came? The most problem that the Prophet had was with the people of Makkah. Right? Was with the chiefs of Makkah. And that too because of the animosity of the Umayyads and the other people of the Quraysh. But when the Prophet sent a message to all the other places, right away you saw them accept right away without any problem, right? You saw them accept right away. Why is that happening? They didn't even see the Prophet. They just heard a message and right away they said, we accept. My friends, because these people, these great scholars, these monks that the people respect and hold in high esteem, they are the ones who are saying that the Prophet is here and he's coming, and when the message comes, you accept it. They are the ones who are teaching the people. My friends, that's the reason. Do not take the message that comes from Ahlul Bayt through these members easily. Because this is what's preparing us to accept Imam Zaman. Slowly and slowly our hearts are being melted for the Imam. Our minds are being trained to accept him through the very messages and the knowledge and the information that comes from these members. This is the same way that you see that the Prophet's coming has been announced by these great people, scholars that everyone regarded as scholars and priests. So now, this is one incident that happened. And that too, you see that there is another riwayat that says regarding when these people are going inside the city trying to buy new stuff. So some of them who were Umayyads, you know, because they're also in the same caravan, they saw a group of monks, student monks, right, like house of students, right, saw them, and they saw them as, you know, very weak and like young and excitable, but you know, with yellow faces, meaning that they are so hungry, yellow faces and this and that, right? They saw them like that, and these students came upon them and they said, hey, listen, where are you from? They said, we are from Makkah, right? People didn't even know his name. His own tribesmen didn't know his name. They said, we only refer to him as the orphan of Abdullah. I mean, Abdullah's orphan. You know, he's just an orphan, you know, I mean, how important can he be? In those days, orphans were like useless. It was like completely condemned people. No value at all, right? They had no backing, nothing, right? So you're an orphan, it means you're going to be a slave when you grow up. That's it. No helper behind you, no backing, right? That's how they referred to the Prophet as. There wasn't importance for him. This guy, he's just an orphan, you know? Orphan of Abdullah's or Abdul Muttalib's orphan. This priest, he said, I want to see that person. I want to see him. Can you show him to me? You know, all right? Yeah, of course. So they all went. They came to the campsite. Now, these people, the Meccans, you know, these Umayyads, they decided, hey, listen, let's check. Let's play a game, a prank on this guy, right? And show him the wrong person. Show him the wrong person, right? So they went and they, you know, showed him some random kid. Yeah. There he is, you know. But then this priest knew what he was talking about and he knew what he was looking for. He didn't even pay attention to them. At that same moment, his eyes caught the Prophet. They saw him and right away, he came up to him. He came up to him. And his statement in public, everyone is there. They see this big priest, they know him coming from the big cathedral that's in Damascus. He comes out of there with his servants, with his disciples. He comes out of there, he sees this kid, goes straight up to the kid and announces, alas, alas, the end of Christianity is here. This is the destruction. He is the one who will destroy Christianity and the church. He declares that in the middle of the people and says, right, when he sees that, kisses the Prophet on his head and says, if I am alive when you declare your prophethood, then I will bear arms in your way. My friends, these are not just normal people coming out there. These are people who have followers, thousands of followers, people who hold them in high respect and esteem. And when these people are testifying by the signs they have seen and recognizing the prophet even before he has announced his prophethood, now you can imagine how the people who are under them are slowly and slowly getting prepared to accept the message of Islam. This is how it works. Allah is now preparing the grounds by which people are going to readily accept the Prophet and his message. And this is what we will see unfold. We have reached this position where the Prophet now is in his young life. A couple of more situations, inshallah, I will speak to you regarding the young life of the Prophet, things that he was involved in, things that he took part in, to see how his decisions play a role in our life. We'll go through that tomorrow. I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to give us the blessing to be on the right path, the wisdom to understand his guidance. Hasten the reappearance of our Imam. Make us his helper when he comes. Wa akhiru da'wana anil hamdulillahi rabbil alameen.